You also heard from Cage, Flying Fortress, from the latest record, Supremacy of Steel, which is perfect timing because I've got Cage vocalist Sean Peck on the line to talk about Supremacy of Steel, to talk metal in general, and of course to talk Marvel Comics. Hey, Sean, thanks a lot for calling in 106.1. How's it going?
Man, I got to tell you, you have the best playlist. I have to give you credit. I do lots of interviews. I do lots of radio. And every time I see your playlist come over the email, people that listen to the show got to really appreciate it, man. And thanks for having me.
And thanks a lot for being on again. We spoke with you back in 2009 when you were promoting the previous record, Science of Annihilation, which we still have on air here at 106.1, killer record. But obviously we've been spinning Supremacy of Steel a lot recently. I don't think there's a single cut on the record we haven't had on air between a few of us here at 106.1. And killer record, man. And but I wouldn't expect anything less from Cage. So let's jump right to it, okay? Last time you and I spoke, I opened up with putting you on the spot and saying, describe the Cage sound. And you said it's like two planets colliding. So I'm going to dig a little bit deeper and say, okay, sound aside, describe the Cage look. I mean,
Cage look.
The Cage look. I mean, five dapper lads in zoot suits, or maybe just five scary looking guys you don't want to wish to meet in a dark alley. I mean, let's say somebody's never met you guys before. Should we be afraid of you and walk to the other side of the road if we see you coming our way?
Yeah, it's, you know, we look pretty mean. You know, of course, Dave Conan Garcia, who's got a separate wing in his compound full of bodybuilding trophies. I mean, he's got like 50 of the things. It's when he used to, early in the band's days, when he was still competing, you know, he'd come all strung out to practice. And like, what's wrong? He's like, I haven't had any water for 7 days, so my skin shrinks to my body. And so, yeah, he definitely adds to the scary look. Black leather and studs, lots of hair, a couple bald guys, but crazy-looking, menacing Oakley chrome sunglasses, and a bad attitude when we get on stage. I mean, our goal in our performance is just to captivate, you know, the audience the whole time. No one's leaving for a beer. No one's taking a bathroom break. You must obey our commands, and it served us well up to this point.
Well, as far as the look goes, yeah, I don't think I'll be seeing you guys, or any of us will be seeing you guys in zoot suits anytime soon. But hey, you know, you look like a real metal band, as a metal band should. And I just wanted to open up, you know, on kind of a more lighthearted tone, because you know, last time we were talking about the Cage sound, and anyone who listens to B&M for sure knows what Cage sounds like, and anyone checking out this interview obviously are fans of the band. They know what you guys sound like. They know what you look like. And I must admit, though, being in the States, a lot of us have not seen you live. So before we get into Supremacy of Steel, what is the status of Cage live in the States? I know you do some shows overseas. You've done some shows here in the States. But are jobs, day jobs, just preventing you guys from ever doing a full-on tour?
No, you know, we talk about this. We're doing it kind of a little differently, you know. Three of the five of us are kind of retired now, so we're able to tour more than we ever have before. We did it backwards. Instead of like devoting your life, you know, to the road early on, we kept pushing in our careers and our family lives, so that now in our sixth album, now we're set up where, you know, we have major touring plans where it'll be consistent, and it'll be what it takes to get the band, you know, up to the next level. Because as many accolades and, you know, fans that we have, we're still a relatively unknown underground band, and that's because we haven't toured really enough. And now it's all right there, and it's possible. And the cool thing about doing it this way is, you know, we're infinitely better now than we were, say, on the first album. So when people see us now for the first time, you know, it's usually a jaw-dropping experience.
So do you feel that a headlining club tour is in the works, or would you want to jump onto somebody else's tour as direct support or an opening band? What are the possibilities for Cage touring in the States?
Well, we've done the East Coast. We kind of do little regional things. We've done the East Coast a few times. We've done the Midwest a few times. But, yeah, we're looking at a bunch of different things right now. You know, being on a package, headlining tour with support. So it's good. I don't know what the final answer to that is, but we're looking at so many different options. And then rock and roll, announce anything until it's, you know, 100% lock solid, because it's such a fluid business model.
Of course, totally understand. You know, tours get announced all the time, and then next thing you know, oh, no, sorry, it's not happening. Like that Deano tour, which was going to be killer with Cauldron and Widow and Icarus Witch, and Paul just decided, I guess, not to do it. So, yeah, you know, tours happen. They come, they go. And, yeah, I do know the Cage does, like you said, the regional tours. But you're saying you're open to the idea of, saying, jumping on, like, say, being direct support for another tour, not necessarily your own thing, but being a part of somebody else's tour.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I love the friendly competition of bands when you go out with them. You know, you're all in it for the Brotherhood of Steel, but yet you want to kick the ass of the band that's
right
before you and after
right
you and everything.
Exactly.
And it's you know, over the years of doing it, performing for a musician, performing is the payoff. You know, it's number one, the thrill of performing. Number two is in metal, man, meeting just the cool people that are in metal, and how scary everyone looks, but how nice they actually are on the inside. And just the friends and fans we've made over the years for what touring we've done has been super gratifying, man. And it's something that really keeps me going in the music business.
It certainly is a brotherhood, no doubt about it. You just go to a metal show and you feel the family vibe. okay, so let's say Cage does either, let's say, you know, you book your own a tour of the United States, or maybe you jump on somebody else's. But do you feel the Cage should perform with, let's say, bands of other subgenres of metal? I mean, are you perfectly fine going out with, say, you know, a brutal death metal band as, you know, direct support for Cage? Or are you fine being direct support for a black metal band or something totally different than what Cage is known for? Are you cool with that?
Yeah, I mean, I love those shows. We've done a lot of all ages shows in Southern California where it's like all, you know, hardcore, metalcore, death metal, and, you know, they go do their thing, and then when the kids get a load of what we deliver, they're just like, hold, you know, this is a different situation. I mean, you know, we played a giant show at the House of Blues in Hollywood, you know, on a Tuesday. There was almost 1,000 kids packed in there. You know, and it was all with thrash bands, and we got up there and, you know, played our power speed metal, and the people freaked out, you know, went nuts. So I love, you know, let's just stand out more. So I'm totally open to that, or, you know, a total power metal package. Either way, I'm game.
That's what I like to hear. And actually, like you said, you know, you can stand out being amongst other style bands. I mean, you actually could run the risk of not necessarily saying the Cage would blend in with other bands, but if you're performing with bands that sound a lot like you, you know, to somebody who's new to the band, you may not stand out as much. So I actually like going to see metal shows where they've got all different styles of metal on the tour package. I think that's awesome. And if anything, Cage would sound even more powerful like that, because you don't have anybody else in the bill that sounds like you. I think that'd be a great thing.
Yeah, Milwaukee Metal Fest was a perfect example of that. It was like 300 bands, and there
right
wasn't one clean singer amongst except me. And that was at that U.S. Arena. You know, we got up there, and I hit that first note, and I think we sold, it was our record, we sold almost 300 CDs right there on the spot. We sold out a freaking a box and a half of them just with a 20-minute set, just because it was a completely different sound.
And when was your performance at the Milwaukee Fest?
That was like 2002 or something, way back when.
Oh, wow. That was early on in your career then. I remember when Milwaukee Metal Fest was around as the premier metal event, you know, annual thing. Yeah, I remember those days quite well. You know what? Let's jump into Supremacy of Steel now, and that's the record that you're promoting. It's Cage's latest record, and anybody who knows Cage's music, or maybe not as familiar but listens to B&M, you know, they've heard the music of Cage quite a bit over the years, and obviously Supremacy of Steel, next logical step in your discography. I want to ask about a few songs on this record that, you know, you can tell me thoughts that come to mind as you were writing the song, as you were recording. It doesn't necessarily need to be what the lyrics are about. I just want your thoughts, personal or otherwise, on a few of these songs off the record.
Cool.
And one of my favorite cuts on the record, and I've got a few, of course, but one of my absolute favorites is Flying Fortress. Now, I certainly have my thoughts on the song and the inspiration. Obviously, not even paying attention to the lyrics, just looking at the song title. I've certainly got my thoughts on what the song is about, and we just heard it a few minutes ago. What are your thoughts on Flying Fortress? How do you feel about it? Do you have any recollection of writing the song?
This song was done almost entirely by the then departing guitarist Anthony McGinnis, and I had recorded there's a whole nother version of it. It was called Damsel in Distress.
Right.
It was kind of like a love song. It was kind of like a Desert Plains type vibe from Judas Priest.
One of the best songs of all time right there, Desert
Plains.
Yeah,
and I really loved how I did that one. And it's people that pre-ordered the CD got a bonus CD with
The Viking edition.
Yeah, the ultimate Viking edition. And on there was that version of it, which I still love and I never got to finish. But the guys were like, "Oh man, it's too wimpy," and I'm like, "You gotta be kidding me." So Anthony's like, I always imagined like one of those old time bombers, and so I love doing research for songs and. I started digging in, to the B-17, the Flying Fortress, and then the attack on Schweinfurt, Germany, which was basically a suicide mission where they took, 300 planes and flew them straight in, no secrecy, into bomb this ball bearing factory in Germany. It was one of the biggest turning points of the war as I researched it. By destroying the ball bearing factory, they were unable to build the Messerschmitt fighter planes that were a real big factor in the Allies advancing the ground campaign. And, we got slaughtered, but the mission was a success and no fighter coverage. They just, flew in there, tight formation, and thousands of Messerschmitts came and just like picked them out of the sky. But because of that victory, we went on to win the war, and I put the video together for it, and it was just, what was a better metal topic than that?
I think it's awesome. I remember being a little kid, this was like back in 1980, I actually had a book called B-17 Flying Fortress. So when you guys came out with this album and there was a song called Flying Fortress, I'm like, that has to be about to be that. Come on. And knowing what Cage writes about, it just has to be. And of course it is. And it's not just lyrically, but it's a highlight of the album for me for sure.
But another anecdote to that was, I went in and started singing like in my regular voice, and Dave was in there producing. He's like, can you try something else? And so I just started doing as a joke my Sabaton impersonation. And he didn't really know Sabaton that well, and so he's like, "Yeah, that sounds good." So, but I had never even attempted to sing it like that, or ever even planned it. But I just, like, spur of the moment, went and did that, rolling the R's and stuff, and we ended up keeping it. So it's just like another side of what we can do.
All right, I want you to tell me a little bit about King of the Wasteland, and it's a song that sticks in my head when listening to the record. Because Cage is, what I like about Cage are those really infectious choruses, and King of the Wasteland has one. Talk to me about King of the Wasteland, and if you have any memories of writing, recording, anything like that.
Yeah, that was, the new guitarist, Stephen Brogdon, a young killer, like thrash player, he had that da-da-da-da-da-da thing, like guitar going, and like instantly that melody for that chorus just came right into my head, and I'm like, oh, that's golden right there. So we kind of put it, I came up with that, this King of the Wasteland just came right out of my mouth somehow, and we made it kind of a sequel to the character we created in the Speed Kills off Signs of Annihilation, kind of a post-apocalyptic Judas Priest ode to the Sentinel kind of type thing, and we had the artist kind of draw this little future gladiator, little comic strip in the... in the booklet, and it was a kind of a sequel song, and yeah, a lot of people, that one really sticks in their heads.
Yeah, it's definitely a catchy tune for sure, and sometimes if I just want to listen to like one, maybe two songs off of off the new record, I go for King of the Wasteland or Flying Fortress or Bloodsteel. You got to talk to me about this one, man. I'm sure it's a fan favorite, of course, and the opening wails are just ridiculous. How did you not, I mean, you survived recording those wails, and how did you manage? And how, be honest, was there any studio trickery involved in that?
Let me just put it out there for the record. There's the only thing we have is, like, delay. There's no auto tuning, no, nothing going on. Even like those 6 feet under vocals I do, you know, that's all me. And, you know, something I'm proud of, I've been able to throw those different sounds and voices out there and mix them up and make them sound good. But, yeah, I wanted to come in, we wanted to come in with the blast beat and kind of the, you know, Cradle of Filth shriek so that the, when people first heard the song coming in the album, they're like, oh, what? Cage has totally changed their sound. And then, of course, I turn it up a notch into the classic Super Stream. And so that song really came together. I really like the arrangement on that. We had a guest guitarist who's a friend of ours, goes by the name of Bitter Frost, like a black metal guy, do like a solo on it. And we were going to kind of co-write it together, but we ended up just writing the whole thing. We said, hey, the song's done. Here's the lead section. He's like, but you say Bloodsteel like 38 times. I'm like, dude, it's golden.
Hey, come on. Bruce Dickinson does the same thing with the choruses of his song. He repeats every chorus like a gazillion times every song. You learn from the best.
again, what's more metal than the word blood and the word steel? And so we threw them together. And, there was a big major production video that we were embarking on, and it kind of got derailed. We may still do it. There's a major special effects operation in Hollywood that does the True Blood and Underworld movies that are big fans of ours that are helping us with it. So
cool.
It may still come to pass, but that was going to be the major budget video song, and it may still happen. But yeah, that's a great. That's just screams metal, that track.
All right. So when it comes to performing live, we just talked about Flying Fortress, King of the Wasteland, Bloodsteel. Are those songs you're going to make it into the live set list when you do shows supporting Supremacy of Steel?
Well, we've been doing Bloodsteel. Sometimes we do King of the Wasteland. Flying Fortress, we haven't really thrown out there yet. We are doing some Dr. Doom, goes over pretty good.
Awesome.
And we took a couple runs at the Monitor, which was okay. Metal Empire is a great one live, and I'm drawing a blank now. Metal Empire and
what about the Beast of Bray Road?
Yeah, that was the other one. Beast of Bray Road. We both. I love singing that one live. It's great.
Awesome. Okay, so when you're doing Bloodsteel, are you opening your shows with Bloodsteel?
We've been opening the shows with Bloodsteel, which is really a pain to come straight out cold and have to sing one of the most challenging.
That's perfect though, but for the fans, that's perfect.
But the way that it goes, the musicians that are listening out there, they know it's like you record the record, and a lot of times, you know, the songs on these albums, it's the first time I've ever really sang them live, is the actual recording. You know, most of the stuff's in my head, and we haven't really honed them in, you know, live, so I know what it's going to sound like in my mind, and then it's like the first time recording. It's kind of an interesting anecdote, but that Bloodsteel took me like 4 or 5 times to actually get to be able to sing it. A lot of these songs I create, I'm like, there's no way this song could be sung live by a human being, because it's not only the singing, but just how much of it is, how tightly compact the words are, and how fast they got to come out. And songs like Wings of Destruction, Up Dark and the Black, I thought would never be humanly possible to do, but we're doing them now, and it's like each album gets more and more challenging to sing. I don't know why I do this to myself, but I keep making it really difficult on myself.
Hey, man, it's for the fans. That's why you do it. It's for the fans. And
yep.
If I go see you guys live, you got to open with Bloodsteel. You just have to. And I get, obviously, opening, you know, coming right on stage and then just going right into the, I'm sure that's got to be murder on the vocal cords. And I'm sure that's probably why somebody like Dave Mustaine, you know, I've been pretty critical. A lot of fans have been critical of why they open up their live shows with a song like Trust. And I'm thinking, you know what, it's probably easier to do that on the band, you know, especially with Dave's vocals, you know, doing something really kind of laid back and mellow. But as a fan, dude, if I'm seeing Cage, you got to open with Bloodsteel.
Yeah, everyone has their own vocal technique. It's funny because I don't warm up at all. I don't like warming up. I just come straight out into the Bloodsteel scream. And, you know, talking with, you know, Halford, he doesn't warm up either. I don't think Dio really warmed up. We played with him a few times. And so there's got to be something said for not warming up, because I like, you know, saving all the notes for the set, and I've been able to be pretty successful using that technique.
Hey, whatever works for you, man. Whatever works for you. This is Black Knight Meditations. We're talking with cage vocalist Sean Peck. You know, Sean, I gotta admit, I was a little surprised to see you posting online that Cage working on some new material, considering the Supremacy of Steel has not been out for very long. I mean, you can really call it still a new album. So what's going on with writing this new music? I mean, are you guys just bored, or were there a lot of ideas that didn't make it on the Supremacy of Steel? What's going on with the new stuff?
Well, what happened was I got hit up by some ex-King Diamond members to do a project.
Oh, such and, can you name names?
Pete Black, and then, you know, some of his buddies.
Okay.
I can't say everybody, but
okay.
And so they, you know, they had another singer that they weren't happy with. So we were talking about doing it, and so I said, well, you know, let's do a concept. You know, let's do a frickin' typical horror story, you know, King Diamond type of thing. So I started writing the story, and it ended up being just a complete monstrosity, like a 35-page, single-space, freaking mini-novel that I ended up writing. And I started, you know, passing it around, and people were like, oh, dude, this is awesome, you know. And so then that, you know, that project kind of started losing its life. And so I said, you know what, I like the story so much, I'm going to keep it for Cage. So right now we think we're going to be doing, you know, a kind of King Diamond Abigail horror concept story,
right,
and kind of release it with this manuscript in some sort of format. And the reaction from, you know, the media and the fans has been, oh yeah, that sounds awesome. And I've leaked the story out to a few, you know, metalhead horror literary fans, and they've gone, you know, gaga over it. So I've gotten some real good feedback, and it's like it takes place in London in the 1860s. It's kind of a Lovecraft, H.P. Lovecraft vibe, with some flashbacks to some Egyptian stuff, and I'm pretty excited about the prospects of that, and we've already put together a lot of killer stuff on it.
Well, since this is going to be obviously more of a concept, as you say, do you feel that Cage might be trying some new things never heard on a record before, stretching the boundaries to sort of meld with the story you're trying to convey, or is it you're going to stick to the typical Cage sound, or are you going to try something new?
Well, I mean, you know, trying something new is always a scary thing for me when I hear my bands, my fans that I'm fans of. So we're always, you know, the last Supremacy of Steel, we had some orchestration, we threw in some blast beats, so we're always slowly, you know, throwing in little tidbits. There are going to be some guests that we've already lined up that'll be really closely related to the whole King Diamond experience. I can't, of course, say anything, but the guest lineup's going to be phenomenal, and that's going to be new in itself. And there's a chance there'll be a female voice on it too, which would be a first kind of thing. But I'm real, you know, I'm always super nervous on the next album because we've got such a good track record for these last six in a row, and a concept record is always really tough, you know, not to get too much atmospheric downtime. And, you know, that's why Hell Destroyer was so successful. It was like, you know, Painkiller in a concept package, and I think it's going to be probably our most difficult record to make successful, but I'm excited about taking on the challenge.
Cool. I mean, you mentioned guest performers and a female vocalist. I mean, somebody came to mind was Veronica from Benedictum. I wouldn't mind hearing her on a Cage record, or maybe hearing somebody like Glenn Drover shredding on a song. That'd be pretty killer. You know, I have to wonder, do you feel the Cage, you know, no fans know what you guys sound like. You've got your sound down pat. I mean, you've been doing it for a few records now. You're kind of like this well-oiled machine, and fans know what to expect. So having said that, you know, concept album aside or whatever, I mean, do you feel that Cage can do whatever Cage wants, regardless of what is expected of the band by the fans? Or do you feel that, you know what, Cage can't go beyond the realm it's known for? I mean, how do you feel about that? Can you do anything, or can you not do anything because of what Cage is known for?
You know, we write these songs based on, you know, the goosebump factor. You know, I'm just a metal fan that was a kid in the crowd, you know, fighting his way to the front of the Maiden shows and the Priest arena shows. And, you know, when I get that heavy metal freaking, you know, spider sense tingling, I know that it's, you know, a killer track, and that's what I go off. Whether it's, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb or Painkiller, I'm going to trust my instincts as a fan of this kind of style, because it's served us well, and, you know, our fans react to that. So, if we have so many different, we've been able to show, you know, sounding like Sabaton, sounding like King Diamond, sounding like Judas Priest, you know, we have a chameleon factor to us that's really cool, I think, and a little unique in some senses. But it, to me, it's all about, you got to have a good song. I don't like stuff that's too progged out and too mysterious. I mean, it's got to have a hook, and it's got to be a track that you want to replay. Like I said, you go back to, like, put on Flying Fortress or King of the Wasteland. You know, that's the test for me, is like, is this song something like, hey, dude, play that one again? And right, that's what we're motivated by.
Right. Okay, so maybe the next album won't be a record full of sea shanties, then, is what you're saying. All right, you know. Before we get into comics, because I can't not speak with you about comics, so before we get into that, are you a Padres fan?
Well, you know, I'm a San Diego native, so I always, like, look at the box score and lean towards, like, yes, I'd rather see them have a higher score than the opposing team. I'm not as psychologically and emotionally invested like I am the Chargers, you know, which we live and die by on a day-to-day basis. So, I know that the Padres seem to be the laughingstock of the Major League Baseball this year.
Well, maybe if Cage recorded a theme song, they might win some games. You got to record a Padres theme, man. Come on.
I'm thinking, you know, I wanted to redo the Disco Charger song. I've been wanting to do that for a while, and that's one of the projects still to be finished. We did a song for the indoor soccer team here that was really cool. I'm not sure if we put that on the Ultimate Viking Edition. I got to release that. It came out really good.
Well, I would say that any little help the Padres could get, I mean, come on. Throw them a bone, man. Maybe they win an extra game out of it. All right, so before we let you go, I want to mention that it is 11 p.m. You're listening to WSCA LP Portsmouth 106.1 on your FM dial, and we are streaming online at WSCAFM.org. I'm Mark. This is Black Knight Meditations, and we're speaking with Sean Peck, vocalist for Cage. All right, Sean, let's talk comics, okay? And obviously Marvel Comics, you and I discussed this last time we had you on the air. Both big Marvel Comics fans, especially in the 80s. And got a couple questions for you that maybe they're tough to answer, maybe they're easy to answer. You tell me. If you're going into battle, which one Marvel comic character do you want with you? Standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder, who do you want going into battle with you?
I'm a Silver Surfer all day long.
Wow.
He wields the power cosmic. Pretty much can do anything, and I would be there to motivate him, just that little extra bit to get that viciousness in him where he could, like, dude, quit holding back. Just turn this guy into frickin' space dust. So, yeah, that's an easy one.
Did you like Mobius' Silver Surfer?
I wasn't really that big of a fan of it, actually.
All right.
But, definitely, if I ever got a tattoo, it'd probably be the Silver Surfer.
Cool. All right, now, what did you think of the Fantastic Four Silver Surfer movie, which I loved it. I thought it was great. What did you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, he's on the big screen, so how can you not like it? You
exactly,
know, he looked cool.
Exactly.
The Doctor Doom getting the surfer powers was awesome. They're going to reboot that franchise, and that'll be interesting to see. And just having Chris Evans go from the Human Torch to Captain America.
Yeah, hey, what's up with that?
It was a hard pill to swallow, but, you know. I still think they could have picked somebody else, like the guy from the Human Target would have been good. But I love the Captain America movie, and
yeah,
I'm really enjoying some of the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, the Avengers cartoon, and the Young Justice cartoon. I freaking wake up every morning. Can't wait. If you guys ever watch Young Justice, like the Justice League sidekick, there's a lot of sexual tension in that show, and Superboy gets beat up every single show. It's hilarious.
No, I've not seen that. I remember as a kid, I would watch the Super Friends, you know, the Justice League of America, and that was a really fun cartoon to watch. Really dug that one. Right around the same time as Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends with Iceman and Firestar.
And Thundar the Barbarian was...
Thundar the Barbarian was awesome. It was an
Thundar
awesome...
Thundar was as metal as it gets.
Oh, man, come on. A comet flies by and cracks the moon in half. I mean, how awesome is that?
Yeah, I still watch that on Cartoon Network. I'm a sucker for Thundar.
Oh, I watch that every Saturday too. Absolutely. All right. So, we talked about going into battle. You want Silver Surfer by your side. I certainly understand that. Wolverine wouldn't be so bad, though. I got to tell you, if it's hand to hand combat, him and Captain America in hand to hand combat. How about this one? What villain would you not want to face under any circumstances, even with the Silver Surfer by your side?
It'd probably have to be Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet. You know,
all right. Yeah.
Took out all of the whole Marvel universe, basically. So that's the one. Now I'm interested to see in the new Avengers movie. I hear there is a villain reveal, either in the final credits or at the very end, who is revealed as the one to have been conspiring with Loki. Yeah. So I'm wondering if Thanos is going to make his mark, because they did put the Infinity Gauntlet on display when they were promoting the Avengers movie some months ago. You know, these comic nerds like me, we look for these little tidbits and clues. It's big news. It's big. Big excitement for us.
You know, I'm one of the guys that me being the nerd too, but I'm one of those, I try to stay away from this stuff, you know, because I want it to be like the big reveal, like, oh, I had no idea. Like, I'm a huge Star Wars geek, and, you know, I didn't want to know what was going to happen in the prequels. And like with the Avengers, I'm trying not to find out things. I'm hearing things about, you know, is it the Skrull Kree war? Is there any reference there? Is it there isn't? You know, I'm trying not to find out. I want it all to be a surprise, because never in my wildest dreams did I ever think we'd get an Avengers movie, just because how can you get all these different characters in one film? It's just not going to happen. Well, it's happened, so totally psyched for it. I'm guessing you were pretty psyched for it too then, right?
Yeah, I already got my tickets for IMAX 3D.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and everybody that's seen it just says it's like, you know, the previews show you nothing. It's like completely beyond amazing. The last 30 minutes are basically a war movie. And everyone just says, like, as awesome as the previews are, it's just like a fraction of how insane the movie is. So I can't wait, you know. Oh, yeah. Marvel doing it right. It's a fanboy freaking holiday.
I can't wait either. I'm just so jazzed and psyched about this. This is going to be so killer. And it has to rule. Even if it sucks, it'll still rule.
Well, it's not going to suck, I'll tell you right now.
It's like pizza. Even if it's bad, it's still pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, here's a tough one for you. You're not going to get this one. Or maybe you will. If you're a true comic nerd, man, you've had plenty of thoughts about this. I certainly have. Who's the hottest chick in Marvel Comics?
Boy, the hottest one. I know the White Queen's going to be up there a little bit. I'll go with the White Queen, just because she's got that nasty lingerie thing she's wearing.
Yeah, that's why she'd be on a lot of lists for sure. I think I'm gonna shock you with one that I have always dug, even since as a kid, but still to this day. I like Dazzler.
Dazzler? Yeah, Dazzler. She had that little short, you know, crew cut thing. I thought you were going to say She-Hulk. I was going to say She-Hulk.
Hey, everybody's got their own thing. She-Hulk, guys. I want to live, dude. I mentioned online last time you were on, I had posted something online about it. I'd love to hear Cage do a song about Iron Fist. What can I do to get you guys to record a song about Iron Fist?
Man, let's see. We've done Ghost Rider, Galactus, Doctor Doom, Scarlet Witch. Iron Fist is probably, you know, I used to be a big Iron Fist fan when, you know, back in the 70s when the comics were out. I think I got that Iron Fist issue where they debut Sabretooth. I think that's
I
got a nice copy of that. Iron Fist got to be pretty low on the list. I still got to get Doctor Strange, Juggernaut, Iron Man, and maybe the X-Men are the next on my song list at home.
Oh, come on, not the Juggernaut. Well, that would be very metal, but come on, Iron Fist? Come on, that punch, it's so metal, man. Come on.
Well, have you seen him in Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon? I mean, he's all over that thing.
I love Iron Fist. I started reading Power Man and Iron Fist. It was back in, the late 70s I started reading that. And I always liked that guy. Still to this day, Danny Rand is awesome. Very cool.
The new Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon has amazing animation. I mean, the combat scenes are awesome, and they got Iron Fist just blasting stuff. I mean, he just beat the crap out of Venom in the Saturday morning episode. If you haven't seen that, I mean, that's an Iron Fist dream. I'll
check it out. You mentioned Doctor Strange. I agree. That would be a great character for Cage to do a song for, Doctor Strange. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was That's already mostly written. I mean, we just didn't get around to finish it. So that's actually going to be a reality.
So since you're going to do a concept record next time around, we might not hear that just yet.
Yeah, that's going to be the problem. I mean, we have a lot of songs that are, you know, still there, ready to be done. But the concept album, of course, is going to make that difficult. And, you know, we had that problem when we did the King Diamond song. It was the first song we wrote, and then we decided to do a concept record. I'm like, okay, the King Diamond song doesn't really work with the Hell Destroyer concept, so
right.
We put it as a bonus track.
Right, the extra
track. Yeah, a lot of songs to get to.
All right, so I want to ask you about a couple of characters before I let you go. You know, you and I were reading comics a lot in the 80s. Did you ever have any thoughts or feelings one way or another on the Phoenix back in the 80s?
Well, yeah, you know, that whole Phoenix saga was just amazing. You know, John Byrne, the artist during that time, was one of my favorite artists still to this day. And I loved how he did the X-Men. I loved how he did the Fantastic Four run. And I got all those comics, and, you know, everyone, you remember where you were on 9/11, and you remember where you were when Jean Grey was killed by the Shi'ar Empire and the what do they call them? The something guard, the Imperial Guard.
The Dark Phoenix, I mean, people still talk about, when you're talking about X-Men comics, about storylines, that's one of the ones that comes up almost like first in the discussion. I'm a big fan of the Mutant Massacre. Like Inferno, even the Fall of the Mutants, you know, back in like the mid to late 80s era was really great. You know, you mentioned John Byrne, you know, him and Chris Claremont, you know, how awesome, what dynamic duo. They should be the ones to just do the X-Men forever and, you know, no one ever else. But
one of the cool things that's just come out is the pinball games on Xbox 360 and PlayStation Network, the Marvel pinball games. They just released a pack with World War, Hulk, Avengers Civil War, the Infinity Gauntlet, you know, based on the comic storylines. And then the other, they drive me nuts. I'll sit there for 6 hours trying to beat the dang Fantastic Four.
I've not played them
yet. They're so hard. I got carpal tunnel playing them. But it's real, real cool voices and animations and stuff on those Marvel pinball games. So that's another way to get your Marvel fix.
Yeah, you know, I have the 360, of course. I love Xbox, and I haven't played those. I got to check those out for sure. Do you remember The Beyonder?
Of course.
And back in the day, I remember thinking that's, if there was somebody I wouldn't want to mess with, it was The Beyonder. Talk about somebody that needs to be dug up like this year. Bring that guy back.
I remember just like when the Secret Wars was coming out and like, Spider-Man's got a black costume. What's going on? And, like, they didn't really – I felt, like, so out of the loop, like the entire Marvel Universe is changing. Mm. And, you know, I'm like, what are they doing? I felt, like, out of the loss of control. And they slowly, you know, revealed all these massive changes to the Secret Wars, you know, storyline. And that was another great one. Not a quite the Dark Phoenix level, but definitely very cool.
Yeah, and the Secret Wars, that was certainly the thing back in the 80s for sure. I mean, these days it's going to be Avengers versus X-Men. That's certainly the latest thing that's huge in the Marvel Universe. But yeah, Secret Wars back in the 80s, man, that was great. Secret Wars and Secret Wars, too, I thought were really cool. You know, you mentioned Spidey in the black costume. I'm one of, like, the few guys, I liked Spidey in the black costume. I didn't want to see him lose it. I thought they should have kept it. I thought it was perfect, but I guess I'm the odd guy out there, one of like four people, you know.
That
was pretty cool.
We're metal, of course we're going to want him in a black
Exactly, man, yeah. But then again, I never liked the Green Goblin. I liked the Hobgoblin. So, you know, I don't always go with the obvious choice, that's for sure.
Cool.
Yeah, I want to reiterate that Supremacy of Steel is the latest Cage album. It is out now. Sean, tell us what people probably already know, but just in case for those who don't, your websites and how to get in touch with you guys.
We're at cageheavymetal.com, cageheavymetal.com, facebook.com/cageofficial, reverbnation.com/cageheavymetal, and @cageheavymetal on Twitter. There's so many damn social networks now. We're
yeah,
pretty much on everything. I love talking to the fans. So you people listening out there, I know we've been jibber-jabbering a lot, but hit us up on any of the social networks. I love talking back and forth. We answer everybody personally. And we love talking metal. I'll be up till, you know, 5 in the morning talking to some dude from Serbia about some strange Croatian band. So It metal, like you, metal's in our blood, and we really just appreciate all the time, and we appreciate everybody listening out there that support us. We had a lot of great support from our fans on this album. It's really overwhelming, and hope to make more new fans and people that love power metal with, you know, some vicious painkiller style. There is none better than Cage, man. Come check us out.
And we're going to keep spinning the Cage tunes here on 106.1 for sure. We just want to see you up here in New England live. I mean, we got to get Cage up here. It's got to happen.
We're coming.
And in the meantime, you're going to write songs about Iron Fist, and you can write songs about Rachel Summers, you know, with her wackiness back in the day when she was the Phoenix, and even a Hobgoblin. Come on, Ode to the Hobgoblin. Come on.
Well, I wanted to do a whole Marvel record. I had it all lined out, but it's just the licensing and stuff. I was a little worried about doing. So now we're just leaking one song at a time, you know, so keep staying under the radar.
Fine with me, man. Fine with me. Hey, Sean, thanks a lot for your time. Appreciate you talking things that are not necessarily connected to Cage, like comics and the Padres. But I think that's what makes these interviews fun, you know. It's just not the usual standard stuff. It's having a little bit of fun, showing a different side to the people we're talking to. So I appreciate you affording us a chance to hear your thoughts on things that are not metal. And we'll have to have you back on 106.1 again for sure. And thanks again for all you do and for calling in tonight.
Well, thanks for the support, and everybody, cageheavymetal.com. We got a killer DVD that's amazing. You guys should check it out, pick it up,
right,
and we always throw
absolutely
an extra swag when anyone ever orders from the website. Thanks again, man. I will talk to you later. Thanks, everybody. See ya.